You are listening to the IFH Podcast Network. For more amazing filmmaking and screenwriting podcasts, just go to ifhpodcastnetwork.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Rise of the Filmtrepreneur, How to Turn Your Independent Film into a Money-Making Business by Alex Ferrari. For a free copy of the audiobook, head over to www.filmbizbook.com.
Welcome to the Director Series Podcast, a show dedicated to deconstructing the work of some of cinema's most celebrated and influential film directors. I'm your host, Cameron Bile.
I'm sure it was a very beautiful scene between you.
Patronize me!
Question for you. Do they have a sheet on you where you're from?
Yeah!
Well, that's that then, man.
When it comes to the world of American independent film, there is before Reservoir Dogs and after Reservoir Dogs. Tarantino's feature debut was a truly epical event, almost single-handedly turning a sleepy Utah ski town into a promised land for aspiring filmmakers across the globe. No one quite knew what to make of the film's razor-sharp wit and unflinching violence, but they knew that a forceful new voice had just descended on the complacent Hollywood system. With no prior credits to his name, Tarantino was able to leverage what few connections he possessed to get the script to Reservoir Dogs into the hands of celebrated character actor and one-time Scorsese muse Harvey Keitel. Upon reading Tarantino's script, Keitel immediately called up the aspiring young filmmaker and offered his involvement. The rest of Reservoir Dogs' development story is something straight out of a fairy tale, with Keitel's involvement bringing in $1.5 million in financing and serious name recognition for a film that Tarantino had initially envisioned shooting with his friends for only $30,000. Coupled with the opportunity to workshop his script in depth at the Sundance Institute's directing labs, Tarantino was able to come to set on the first day with all the tools he needed to deliver an unforgettable film. While his later films would sprawl out to broader scales, Reservoir Dogs tells a very tight, very compact story that could easily be translated into a live theater setting, and has on occasion. Five roughneck criminals team up to stage a simple diamond heist, only for it all to go horribly wrong. The dazed and confused burglars rendezvous at an industrial warehouse on the fringes of town, trying to make sense of what just happened. As they argue and debate amongst themselves, they slowly realize that there's a rat, or worse, an undercover cop, in their midst. But figuring out the identity of said rat won't be so easy, with tempers flaring and unexpected betrayals that raise the drama to Shakespearean proportions. Tarantino has always had an impeccable eye for casting, and the ensemble he collected for Reservoir Dogs proves that notion with a suite of unconventional yet inspired choices. Keitel himself experienced a mid-career resurgence as a result of his performance as Mr. White, the tough yet tender thug at the center of the story. Tim Roth as Mr. Orange is convincing as both a dangerous criminal and a cocky undercover cop. Roth's performance is superlatively dynamic, considering that he spends the majority of his screen time lying in a pool of blood. In the first of several regular appearances throughout Tarantino's work, Michael Madsen plays one of the film's most terrifying characters, Vic Vega, alias Mr. Blonde, a smooth career criminal with a volatile, sadistic streak. Mr. Blonde is a self-described sick man, taking great pleasure in torturing a cop by cutting off his ear and soaking him in gasoline, creating one of American cinema's most profoundly disturbing moments in the process. Steve Buscemi steals the show as Mr. Pink, a squirrely, self-deluded member of the team. Tarantino himself initially wanted to play the part of Mr. Pink, but Buscemi's energetic, bug-eyed audition convinced him otherwise. Buscemi's performance is incredibly memorable, with his argument for why he doesn't tip waitresses in the opening diner scene becoming yet another iconic moment in the movie. Veteran character actor Lawrence Tierney plays the gang's curmudgeonly boss, Joe Cabot, with a tough yet paternal flair. Rounding out the cast is the late Chris Penn as nice guy Eddie, Joe Cabot's vindictive rich prick son. As Tarantino's first true professional work, Reservoir Dogs looks relatively slick and polished. The first film to be produced with his frequent production partner Lawrence Bender, Reservoir Dogs puts every cent of its $1.5 million budget on the screen. Cinematographer Andre Sekula imbues the 35mm film frame with a muted, washed-out patina that makes the bold splashes of crimson blood all the more jarring and visceral. For the most part, Reservoir Dogs assumes a somewhat formalistic camera style, preferring dynamic 2:35:1 compositions and deliberate, butter-smooth dolly movements interspersed with jarring handheld work, especially in the use of long tracking shots, a technique that would later become one component of Tarantino's signature style. For instance, there's a moment halfway through the film when Mr. Blonde interrupts the torture of his captive to retrieve a gas can from his car outside. The camera follows Michael Madsen as he steps outside, grabs the canister, and returns inside in one continuous shot. While admittedly simple from a conceptual standpoint, this technique is incredibly complicated to pull off in one long take. There's exposure adjustments and focus pulling to worry about, not to mention the need for an adjusted lighting setup to compensate for the discrepancy in color temperatures between interior and exterior. Techniques like this require a competent, steady hand that fundamentally understands the nature of film-based acquisition. That it all feels so casual and off the cuff is a mark of photographic excellence. The same sequence also illustrates Tarantino's very apparent grasp on his craft via his use of music. His eclectic taste in vintage, forgotten tunes from his youth results in the jarring juxtaposition of a jaunty Steeler Wheel track against images of brutal ear dismemberment. This cackling display of horrific irony and vantablack comedy easily makes for the film's most memorable moment, forever twisting any pre-existing associations we may have had with the song. It's a prime example of the rockabilly-flavored musical landscape that blankets Reservoir Dogs, brought to you not by any conventional composer or musician, but through the fictional disc jockeys at K-Billy, the premier radio station in the Tarantino-verse.
It's K-Billy's.
In his earliest collaboration with the late Sally Menke, who is arguably as responsible for the foundation of Tarantino's artistic voice as the director himself, he introduces his chronological conceit of non-linear storytelling, which allows him to withhold key information for maximum dramatic impact, while avoiding the tedium of remaining in the warehouse for the whole duration of the film. Reservoir Dogs begins the Tarantino tradition of breaking his story up into distinct chapters, usually accompanied with an intriguing title card. Not only does this conceit allow him to scramble the chronology of his narrative, but it also allows him to divert our attention to little side episodes or character-focused events without feeling like he's meandering away from the main thread. This gives Reservoir Dogs and his subsequent works a distinct literary quality. His films are the most graphic of novels, appealing to our most violent and carnal impulses in the name of entertainment, while subconsciously feeding us his sophisticated and complex storytelling sensibility via digestible nuggets of action. With its high-profile exhibition at Cannes and prestigious wins for Best Supporting Male at the Independent Spirit Awards and the Grand Jury Prize at Sundance, Reservoir Dogs put Tarantino's bold, take-no-prisoners style on the map, establishing several signature tropes that have come to define the quintessential Tarantino style. Mexican standoffs, bathrooms, diners, profanely witty dialogue, shocking bursts of unexpected violence, and left-field pop culture references, to name just a few.
Like a Virgin's not about some sensitive girl who meets a nice fella.
When Tarantino used his crucial opening minutes to ramble at length about the true meaning of Madonna's song Like a Virgin, he jump-started the era of self-referential pop culture that gave us the likes of Joss Whedon and Wes Craven's Scream. As an interesting little aside, the characters mentioned Pam Grier at one point, who would later go on to star for Tarantino in his third feature, Jackie Brown. It's not hyperbole to state that Reservoir Dogs was a game-changing picture, the release of which launched one of the most audacious and divisive careers in contemporary American cinema. All those years of watching countless films, hacking away at old scripts, and good old-fashioned networking had finally coalesced into a directorial style comprised of everything that had come before it, yet was completely unlike anything we'd ever seen before. The Director Series is made possible by the support of our subscribers on Special. Subscribe today at special.tv/The Director Series and gain access to exclusive full-length Director Series episodes and other bonus content, ad-free.